Welcome to the Dry Eye Coach podcast series, Click on Dry Eye, your insider pass to the most exclusive dry eye topics. The series will raise awareness about the current and future state of ocular surface disease. The podcasts will focus on a variety of topics. Before we get to our next episode, here's a quick word from our sponsor.
This episode of Dry Eye Coach is sponsored by Taya Pharma Inc., the makers of IVISIA and IUSA. For more information on Taya Pharma Inc.'s portfolio, please visit TayaPharmaInc.com. That's TheaPharmaInc.com.
Hey, everybody. Today we have Dr. Jake Lang from Associate Eye Care here on our Click on Dry Eye podcast. Welcome, Jake.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? Good to see you.
Hey, Jake. We're so glad to have you here. But before we get started, can you just tell us a little bit about your practice?
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Walt. I'm Jacob Lang. I'm an optometrist at Associated Eye Care on the east side of the Twin Cities metro area, Minnesota, and western Wisconsin. There I head the dry eye services, medical director for dry eye services, and residency coordinator, and help out with all things I can in clinic, as always.
Well, today we're going to talk about what's hot in 2023 and beyond. But other than some of the things I'm pretty sure you're going to talk about, what are some of the things you're doing in your clinic to optimize your dry eye services within the clinic?
Yeah, we've expanded our testing a little bit over the last couple of years, kind of trying to integrate more digital computer-based analysis of tear breakup time with non-invasive tear breakup time, measuring tear meniscus height. And actually trying to put a number with some of these things that we've, you know, appreciated clinically for years, but trying to put more of a number on some things and see really what's normal, what's changing, how do we monitor over things over time. And, you know, as we all know, the digital age and the age of AI is hopefully this metadata is going to just help us be better providers in the future.
It's amazing that you have so many great options for diagnostics. I think that's going to really help to educate our patients and push them more into selecting better treatments. Speaking of better treatments, what are you the most excited for that's new?
Well, I think there's a lot of excitement around everything coming in the anterior segment section, right? Like there's just a lot of new buzz. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of good things coming. So, you know, I think the biggest thing I'm excited about is probably XDEMVY. Lotilaner ophthalmic solution is probably the thing I'm most excited about. You want to dive right into it?
Tell us more.
What does it treat?
All right, so Lotilaner ophthalmic solution is FDA approved for our good friend Demodex blepharitis, right? So attacking kind of a different part of the ocular surface in the microbiome that lives on our lashes, and having an opportunity to have a new antimicrobial. We haven't had anything that was antimicrobial since, I guess, the newest version of a fluoroquinolone. That's been a hot minute since we've talked about killing something that's getting out of control. And so I think XDEMVY is allowing us that opportunity to remove a pathogen in our ocular surface that might be getting out of control. And I'm really excited about that because it's a completely new thinking. It's a completely new pathophysiology that we really haven't had an opportunity to attack in the past.
Yeah,
it's something that that's what I want to know. Is there a specific patient type for this? Like, how do you know if your patient is a good fit for XDEMVY?
Yeah, so I think, you know, if you're thinking about a patient with symptoms, right, a patient that's having problems, a patient that comes to you as their doctor that's having issues with their eyes and their eyelids, we want to find those patients that are having problems with Demodex if we're going to prescribe a medication that's approved for killing Demodex. And so to find those patients, to tease those patients out, I think it's, number one, important that we identify patients that have Demodex, right? So we need to find patients that have Demodex. If you're trying to kill Demodex in a patient that doesn't have Demodex, you're not going to get too far. So having the patient look down and identifying collarettes on the lashes, I think that's just key, huge take home for all of our patient or all of our providers to identify patients that have collarettes and have Demodex. Now, you know, we're learning, right? So we don't completely know who has too many Demodex and who has problems. So trying to pair that finding of, hey, I have collarettes, or this patient has collarettes, and they have symptoms that might be associated with collarettes is the next step. I've found in my clinics that patients that, you know, have problems with their itching, especially along their lids, that's a home run. But also anyone that might have increased redness along their lid margin near these collarettes, patients that are complaining of crusting along their lids, and honestly, patients that, you know, just have disruption of the ocular surface and the meibomian glands, whether that be, you know, just meibomian gland disease and signs of that, it might be things like chalazion or other signs of disruption in the skin that is our lids and the lacrimal functional unit that comes from these lids. That's really who I'm thinking about would be a good candidate for XDEMVY.
Hey, Jake, so you mentioned the patient that's symptomatic. They're actually asking for help. What about that patient that has 3+ Demodex? You know, asking, how you doing? I'm fine. So how are you going to get buy-in for that patient? I'm just curious.
Yeah, you know, I think a picture's worth 1,000 words there, Walt. When you show a patient, like, this is your lids and this is the buildup I'm seeing, I think that really motivates patients to want to do something. If I showed a patient, you know, how much plaque they had built up on their teeth or between their teeth, I think, you know, that makes a easy sell for a deeper cleaning in the dental office. And I don't think this is much different. So pictures are huge. But, you know, teasing out, you know, what does fine mean to you and things like that. You know, a lot of these patients are, quote unquote, asymptomatic, when really they just are used to their symptoms. They've dealt with them for so long that they've kind of just put up with things.
So, Jake, thank you for giving me Demodex. Go ahead, Tracy.
I was going to say, even the word might is definitely something that motivates patients to do something different. So no one likes to hear the mites, right? Okay. Yeah, continue.
So, Jake, you just gave me mites. You just gave me Demodex, all right? So what is that discussion? I'm the patient. Can you talk to that?
Yeah, so I rein it in a pretty good amount. You know, I say there are these things that live on our lids and lashes, just like bacteria, but there's other things besides bacteria that live on our lids and lashes, like something called Demodex. I'll say something like, you know, there are different organisms that live along our lids and lashes, and sometimes they get out of control. I try not to dive too much in the mites personally, but depending on the conversation and the patient, we can delve a little deeper. But I usually try and stick with microorganisms. And say that they're, you know, just normal things that live on all of us, so that they feel included, but letting them know that this is, you know, something that people have, but it's just getting a little out of control. Something's out of balance. What about you guys? What do you do?
I just tell the patients that they're just too delicious, that the dry condition that they have, the underlying MGD, whatever it happens to be, just makes them like a great food dish. So when, like, feeding stray cats, you put a food dish out for stray cats, you get too many. One or two is fine, but 200, probably not great. So I just try to think of them so that they don't feel like there's something like unhygienic about themselves. I just tell them they're too delicious. That's all.
Yeah, I just tell them it's normal. They have it, I have it, we all have it. My scribe hates it when I say they have it. But either way, we just say this is a treatment for it and tell them what to do. So that's definitely exciting. What else are you excited about? I mean, there's another drop called Mibo. Tell us more.
Yeah.
Unless you're not excited. Mibo. And you can change it. Change the topic.
I am excited about Mibo or perfluorohexyloctane. Really because I get to have more syllables in my vocabulary. But Mibo is exciting. It's something different, something we haven't had in the past, in that it's really a tear film stabilizer. And we've been working on our meibomian glands to help stabilize the tear film over the last 5-10 years. And I think that's probably been the biggest area of growth in ocular surface disease is acknowledging the meibomian glands, what they do, how they help stabilize the tear film, and how important they are to that lacrimal functional unit again. And to have something that can supplement what we've been doing with meibomian gland health is really exciting. And that we know that this is, you know, meibomian gland disease is a chronic progressive condition. And we've all seen those patients that we're really, you know, hesitant to promise too much when we know their meibomian glands are pretty far gone. And be able to say, you know, I have something that might supplement everything I can do to help restore and rejuvenate your meibomian glands as much as possible. But I also have this drop that's going to help stabilize your tear film in a different way, but a similar way to what your normal meibomian would do is really exciting. So I'm really excited about that part, in that we have something to prevent evaporation, to help stabilize the tear film, but also the frictional things. I think that's really interesting from a, you know, anterior seg nerd perspective, that these frictional forces we've talked about in other ocular pathologies like lid wiper epitheliopathy, filamentary keratitis, maybe in things like superior limbic keratoconjunctivitis, and how frictional forces play such a role in a lot of these patients. I'm excited to use this in different avenues that have frictional forces at their root to see how that'll help other conditions that like comorbid ocular pathologies. So I'm excited about that with Meibo. I think it's, you know, interesting that it's a completely different molecule. I'm still kind of trying to wrap my head around how it's a solution when it's really just perfluorohexyloctane. It's preservative-free, which is exciting.
Preservative-free, steroid-free. Yeah.
Right. So it's something, you know, we kind of have to wrap our minds around. I mean, it's been around for a long time. It's even been used in, you know, vitrectomies and things like this for a long time, but applying to the ocular surface as a stabilizer is really interesting and something we all need to wrap our minds around and get after it.
So when are you implementing Meibo? Are you starting right at the beginning of therapy? Are you waiting for patients to get through some of the anti-inflammatory treatments that you do? Where are you implementing this?
Well, I think, you know, anti-inflammatories are a huge part of dry eye, right? It is really where this is based, that we know inflammation is our enemy in the ocular surface and the anterior segment for many other conditions. So inflammation is still a core belief, if you will, a core mantra in my clinics. But I think this is nice in that it supplements what we do. So I do use it early. I think it's really great for early mild disease. But I also think it has a really great adjunct therapy in that we want to target inflammation, but we know inflammation's been coming for a long time and it's going to take a long time for it to go away a lot of times, that I can't cure inflammation overnight, but I can stabilize the tear film overnight. And I might be able to give the patient some instant gratification overnight. And I think that's really what Americans like most is instant gratification. So any opportunity to try and kill two birds with one stone, and that I'm giving patients some gratification and helping them get better quicker, but also targeting their inflammation and some of the deeper pathophysiologies that are occurring, I think that's a win-win for both me and the patient.
So what do you say when someone says it sounds like an artificial tear?
Yeah, I don't, it's artificial, I'll give you that. But I don't think it really has anything to do with our tear film, right? It's not found in our tear film. It has nothing consistent with our tear film. The biggest thing it does have as a similarity is it prevents evaporation, and that is similar to our oil layer and that structure. But other than that, its similarities there just aren't any.
Just look at the data. I mean, the data speaks for itself. What have you seen hitting the primary endpoint at day 57 as early as day 15 for both symptoms as well as total corneal fluorescein staining? And so that's very impressive. So you mentioned several different patient types. So is there an ideal candidate, or are you like me just trying on everybody right now?
Right. Yeah, I think that there's Tracy, a lot of opportunity.
Go ahead.
Everybody, yeah. I am I'm trying this in all kinds of different ways on everybody. I mean, it is supposed to be dosed, you know, QID four times a day. That was shown to be the best over any other dosage amounts of it. But we're having patients putting in that last drop in at night. We're having patients seeing how they feel in the morning after using their last drop of the day at night. So there's a lot of different opportunities to see what this can do.
Well, awesome. I mean, that's very exciting as well. Well, what else is exciting, Jake?
Yeah, everything's exciting. there's a lot of things coming in the pipeline too. We'll find out more about our possibility of RASP inhibitors within the next month. I think there's some things coming with TRP receptors and things that were targeting nerves in the cornea. I mean, we've learned a lot from Sonegerman and how important corneal nerves are, and expanding that horizon of understanding how to stimulate and activate nerves, whether it's varenicline, like Tyrvaya as a nasal spray to stimulate nerves, or topical things to stimulate the other receptors in corneal nerves. So I'm really excited about that nerve function component in ocular surface disease, and just expanding our knowledge and getting more specific about that. So I think there's a lot of opportunity for improvement there, a lot of opportunity for expansion, and a lot of opportunity for us to grow as a profession and as a specialty as we unwind many of these multifaceted nuances to our ocular surface.
Well, thank you so much. That was so great. We're just the best time for ocular surface right now. There's just so many new things that are coming out, and we completely appreciate your time coming in and giving us your information and knowledge and giving us the key at what's next.
Yeah, no, it's always fun to hang out with my friends and colleagues, and you two are doing such great things. I always appreciate the opportunity to spend time having a conversation with my friends.
Thanks, Jake.
Thanks for listening. Join us for our next episode soon. Find us online at www.dryeyecoach.com and at all major podcast platforms.